You know, there's a question that God is always asking about you and I. He's asking and he's looking for an answer up to this question from us always. But to answer this question, it can't all be achieved at once. No, it takes time, and it takes time for this to take place. But he wants to know, and he wants to ask, and he wants to find out if it's solid, if it's real, if it's authentic. And he wants to know this. And the question he's asking is, are you authentic? Or do you wear a mask? Are you authentic or do you wear a mask? Now, we all end up wearing a mask in life at a certain point in time. You know, our lives, things take place in our lives. It could be things that have been done to us. It could be things that we've done ourselves. But we end up building a mask. We end up covering. We end up hiding. We end up being and putting on a front so that we appear as something else. So, and it's not always a malicious thing. You know, sometimes we wear a mask because of things that have been done to us. Things that other people have done to us have caused us great pain and great harm. And so we build a wall. We build a mask. We build something to protect. Or it could be things that we have done ourselves. Things that we have done in our own lives that have caused us our own pain. And it has caused us to build and to put on a mask in the same way. And you know, sin is a part of what causes this. And that could be sin that's done to us or sin that we've done ourselves. If you remember, what happened when Adam and Eve sinned themselves? What did they do? One of the first things they did is they ran. They hid. They hid their faces from God. They covered their bodies. And what happens when sin gets introduced into something is we tend to go and run and hide. We tend to hide our face from God. We tend to put on a mask. We tend to show up a certain way and pretend that it's not taking place or that it's not happening. And what God is doing is what we find is at this time during the holy day seasons, we are taken through a journey. We are here for 7 days. We keep the days of unleavened bread. And that pictures that this entire thing is a process. What God is looking for us to do is he's asking, are you authentic or are you wearing a mask? And the process he takes us through is to try to get us to remove the mask, so that we can see clearly and that he can see us clearly. You know, there's two things that happen when we have a mask on. We don't see God clearly and he doesn't see us clearly. And so what God does, and we'll find in the scriptures, is that he constantly tests and he's constantly asking the question, are you authentic? Or am I wearing a mask? Are you wearing a mask? And the process he takes us through chips away and begins to remove this mask from us. There we go. If you want a title for today's sermon, I can barely read that. I think it's called Removing the Mask. But I don't know if you remember the scene in Star Wars when Darth Vader was defeated by Luke. Luke is his son, that's his dad. And Darth Vader was someone who wore a mask. He was someone because of his own sins, he was angry, he was out of control, as well as he was influenced by the Emperor to do bad. He had sins done to him, and he was sin. He was a completely disfigured person. And he wore a mask and a whole suit to cover that up. And if you remember at the end when Luke kept saying to him, no, Father, I see there's good in you. I can see you. At the end when he was defeated, what did he end up doing, if you remember the scene in the movie? Is Darth Vader ended up removing his mask. He took his mask off. And he said, no, I want you to see me, son. And I want to look on you. And what we find is, just like in the movie like this, this is the process by which we go through. Sin is involved, and sin is a problem. But what God is taking us through to remove a mask isn't just something that's out of a punishment. It isn't just something out of, hey, you've got this, so you know you've got to pay for that. God wants us to be able to see clearly and to remove our masks. He also wants to see us clearly. Just like Darth Vader and Luke, he said, no, take my mask off. I want to see you and let you look on me, see who I really am. And this is what we find is taking place. The 7 days teach us this. that it's not an instantaneous thing. It's a process that takes a period of time. It's a process that takes time. And that's just what God is bringing us through. Now, the Bible talks about this idea, but it uses different terms. And this is wherein lies the problem sometimes, because the terms in the Bible we read one way, but it's actually talking about another way. Let's turn over to Luke 12, verse 1. Luke 12, verse 1, and we find a very relevant scripture talking about these actual days, or what we do during these days. Luke 12, verses 1, says, in the meantime, when an innumerable multitude of people had gathered together so that they trampled one another, he began to say to his disciples, first of all, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. For there's nothing covered that will not be revealed. There's nothing hidden that will not be known. They'll be unmasked. Therefore, whatever you have spoken in the dark will be heard in the light, and whatever you have spoken in the ear in the inner rooms will be proclaimed on the housetops. Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, so we could have the days of unleavened bread that we keep. And Christ was very adamant and very strong about talking about the leaven of the Pharisees and what he calls that, and he identifies it here. He says, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. The word hypocrisy is an interesting one. First of all, when he says, beware of the leaven, he's not saying that from a standpoint of, hey, you're walking around and, oh, look, I might encounter it, so I just got to run. The idea of the language is to put your mind on yourself and try to avoid this. In other words, beware of this inside of you. See these things over here? Beware of this taking place inside of you. And we look at the word hypocrisy. It's very interesting. It's translated hypocrisy. It's translated different ways. But it's like an acting or a stage player, right? Or to hide under a false pretense. You know, back in the day in theater, what they would do is, you know, people would come out and they would do a play and things, and they would have a mask, not a Darth Vader mask, but they would have a mask and they would put it on and they would play themselves as another person. It wasn't necessarily bad. It was just saying, hey, that's not who you really are. You've got a mask on and you're pretending to be another person. That's what the idea of an actor did at those times. And the same thing kind of holds true for us. The idea of the word behind it is like you're an actor with a mask on. And what God is asking us to do is to take a look at this so that we can get rid of or not be like this. He says, beware. Hey, you watch out. Beware of this creeping up inside you. Beware of what you see over here happening inside of yourself. And if we look at the word hypocrisy in the Old Testament, it's translated a different way. So we have a English word hypocrisy. When we hear that, we kind of go, oh, great. You know, here's a, it's kind of a very negative term, but hypocrisy meant a number of things. And the Old Testament is translated differently. It was translated to hide 22 times. Like, that's out of 28 times, the word is translated to hide, right? So if you think about that, hiding behind a mask or you hiding something, it's translated blind, it's translated hidden or secret thing, or something that's concealed, to be concealed, to hide oneself is the idea of it. And if you, I won't turn to any of these, but Leviticus 4:13 says, you know, if there's a sin, if somebody sins through ignorance and the thing be hid from the eyes, that word be hid is hypocrisy. And then 1 Kings 10:3 says, you know, she was asking her questions and there was nothing hid from the king. When they, nothing hid from the king. So that's hypocrisy is the idea, hiding. Another one in 2 Kings 4:27 says, the soul is vexed within her and the Lord has hid it from me and he's not told. And Solomon told her all the questions in 2 Chronicles 9:2. It says, and there was nothing hid from Solomon, which was he told her not. When you see this word, hypocrisy, we kind of think of it a little bit differently. But the idea and the intent of hypocrisy means it's to hide something. It's to cover things up. Ecclesiastes 12:14 says, for God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing. So secret thing, hidden things, things that be hid from, those are all the idea of hypocrisy. And the idea is that you're hiding and you're covering it. You're covering something up. Like I said, there's a couple ways we can do this. You know, there can be malicious covering, and this is what Christ was talking to the Pharisees about, is he was saying, or, you know, telling his disciples about them is they were doing this. They were maliciously doing this. But there's also non-malicious hiding. Like I said, you know, when we're shamed or guilty or we feel awful. I mean, Adam and Eve, you know, they knew they sinned. They knew all of a sudden that they sinned. So they ran, they hid. You know, they were afraid of God all of a sudden. And you can think of it like that. They still hid. The Pharisees were religious leaders who, you know, did things on purpose. So the idea here is there are things that may be we do sometimes that cause us to hide. There might be things that are done to us that cause us to hide. But God is working on removing a mask no matter how it came about. God is working on us taking off our masks no matter how it happened to us. And he wants us to see clearly, and he wants to clearly see us. It required for that to take place. It's required for this process to take place for this to happen. And so what he does is he works on removing that mask from us. So this is the question that God keeps asking us, or about you and I, and he keeps testing for an answer. And this doesn't happen all at once. No, it takes time, and it takes a long time to take place. But when it does happen, it's solid, it's real, it's valuable. And that question he keeps asking is, are we sincere? Are you sincere, authentic? Guess what the word sincere means, if you look at the definition of the word sincere in the Greek word. It means without hypocrisy. It's funny how that is. He's saying, beware of this type of stuff happening in you. And to become sincere is without hypocrisy, without these things. So turn over to Philippians 1 verse 9. Philippians 1 verse 9. And we see this word used. Philippians 1 verse 9 says, and this I pray, that your love may abound still more and more in knowledge and all discernment, and that you may approve the things that are excellent, that you may be sincere and without offense till the day of Christ. Sincere is an interesting word there, right? And like I said, it means with hypocrisy, but there's a few words that are translated like this. This is a different one. It's elekrines. Elekrines. And that's the Greek word for sincere. It means unmixed or without an alloy, or it means pure, free from hypocrisy. It means honest, genuine, real. In Latin, it translates as sinceris. The prefix sin means without, and sere means wax, right? It means without. If you look at it from a Latin perspective, it means without wax. And the idea of without wax sounds a little bit funny, but what would take place sometimes is when people had pottery back in the day, is that it could develop little cracks. It wasn't as easy for them to create pottery as we do today. We can manufacture it like whatever, and if it breaks, you throw it out. It was very valuable to create pottery, and sometimes you might end up with a crack in it. And so if you had a crack, sometimes what a merchant would do is they would cover that up or fill it in with wax. You know, because wax can just be, you know, melted and molded into the cracks and then paint over that. And you wouldn't know if you took a look at that if it was cracked or not. And so sincere means without wax, literally, without that wax. Now, how do you know it's sincere? So elekrines, the word, also means it's judged by sunlight or tested by light. You know, it's like, you know, I have this dish up here, and if you see, you know, it's just, you can see it's kind of, okay, it looks like a normal dish, but if you were to hold it up to the light, you would see different things about it. Like this, if I put a light on this, you can kind of see that there are some different carved out markings on there, right? But you don't see that kind of a thing in this dish until you shine a light on it, and that's what elekrines mean, is judged by sunlight. And so, back in the day, they would take a dish, and you could hold it up to the sunlight, and then you could look and go, oh man, I can, you know, as the light shines through it, I can see a crack. And so this word sincere means that. It means it's genuine. It was judged by the sun. There was no crack found in it. It was sincere, right? And you can, and that's how that works. Now, there's another cup I have. This used to be one of my favorite mugs, but now I don't drink coffee cups this big. I only drink espresso-sized cups now. This is one of my favorite cups at one point in time. And I look at this and I see zero cracks in it. Sometimes it's hard to tell. But every time I put coffee into this, for some reason, I get a little tiny puddle that starts to form on the table. I have no idea why. I keep looking around this cup and I can't see. And what I had to do is I actually had to take this one and get a super high-powered flashlight and stick it in and shine around. And then all of a sudden, I saw something very subtle. And it's the same idea. It's not evident to the eye. And so when it's talking about sincere and what God's looking at for us, is he's looking for the same thing in us. Are we sincere? And he's going to test that. He's going to test, are you sincere? Hold you up to the light. Do I find a crack? Are you without wax? You know, is in any of that. And that's what this word means. So the intent and the idea of that word is quite an interesting word. Sincere means all of those things behind the word, with the pottery and the cracks and filling it with wax and testing it by the light and seeing if you can actually see it. And sometimes you can't just with your naked eye. So the idea here is God is asking us this. When we look at when sin's introduced, hypocrisy, the idea of the word is not necessarily how we always use it today ourselves. Hypocrisy is covering or hiding something. And like I said, it could be malicious or it doesn't have to be malicious. And what God is doing and asking us to do is to look at that. Are we like that? And he's working with us to remove that mask so that we can see him, be seen, and become sincere. So am I wearing a mask or am I sincere? This is what the days of unleavened bread talk to us about. Now, we heard in the sermonette, which was very good, we learned something from these days of unleavened bread. I know in the past, I don't know about you, but you know, I grew up in the church for umpteen gazillion years. And when I was young, we would always hear sermons that were about putting out the bread. They were always about, you know, finding crumbs and putting out the, make sure you don't find a loaf of bread or, you know, oh man, I was halfway through the Feast of Unleavened Bread and, oh, I opened a cupboard and there was a pancake sitting there. And, you know, we have all these stories and the whole idea was, oh man, just make sure you put out the leaven. And then it would stop. And I'm thinking, well, this is not just the days of put out leavened bread. This is called the days of unleavened bread, and it says we are to actually eat. As we heard before, it's not just, hey, I'm just squeezing the air out. I'm actually putting something in. And what we find out is that God has given us a pattern with this, with the idea of putting out leavening, which we do. You clean your house, you put out the leavening. But you don't stop there. It's not just put out days of unleavened bread. It is, or put out the leavening. It is to eat each day some unleavened bread. And this pattern that we do physically teaches us something spiritually. It's not just, hey, I'm just put that out. It is actually putting something on. It is not just putting it out. It is putting something on is what these days are about. In fact, that's way more the emphasis if you think about it. Yeah, we put out the leavening, but we're supposed to eat for 7 days unleavened. So the pattern that we learn from these days is the pattern for us to, and that God will take us through, to actually remove the mask, to actually get the hiding out, and to put on the authenticity, the authentic things. Now, wouldn't it be great if there was a list that Christ defined in the Bible that were the things to put off during these days? Wouldn't it be nice if there was just as, hey, let's just put these off during the days of unleavened bread? And wouldn't it also be nice if there was an equal list that said, here's the things to put on during the days of unleavened bread? Wouldn't it be great if we had that kind of a thing in the Bible? And it wouldn't it even be cooler if those two lists, you know, mirrored each other perfectly? Hey, put this off, put this on. Put this off, put this on. That'd be pretty cool, I think, wouldn't it? That'd be remarkable if we had that. You know what? There are two lists in the Bible that are just that, that Christ tells us. There are 8 things he says that are leavening. There are 8 things he says to put off. In a separate location, not related to that story or that list, are another 8 things He says to put on. Guess what? Those things perfectly align. When you look at this and see the wisdom that God had and what Christ is talking about, he has two lists of eight things. Put these off, put these on. Two separate occasions he talked about these two lists, not in the same context, to the same people. And they match up perfectly. This is what I want to go through today, because exactly putting off and putting on is how we remove a mask, how we remove our mask. Because think about this, it's less about hiding. The word hypocrisy is in the Bible, covering things, being guilty, fearful, covering, cowering, hiding from God. It's getting rid of those things, and it's putting on the things, the unleavened bread of Christ, and living a certain way, which is the opposite of those things. These two lists, Christ outlines, one here and one here. Can you guess where those are? Or can you think about where that might be? What would be the list of things that would be to put off? Any guesses to where that is? Hypocrisy or leaven. Do you know what the hypocrisy chapter is in the Bible? There's a chapter on hypocrisy in the Bible where Christ steps through and he talks to the scribes, the Pharisees, and the hypocrites. And he goes, woe to you. He says this eight times. He says, woe to you, because you're a hypocrite and you do this, you do this, and you do this, and you do this. That chapter is Matthew 23. Chapter is Matthew 23. In fact, let's turn back to Matthew 23. Matthew 23. So the list of hypocrisy is in Matthew 23. Where do you find the list of authentic or sincere that Christ gave? Eight things. What do you think that would be? Any guesses? I think I heard somebody say. There's stuff there. I think I heard, did somebody say Beatitudes? I thought I heard that. It's the Beatitudes. It's the Beatitudes in Matthew 5. So we have a list of hypocrisy, and the hypocrisy chapter is Matthew 23. And the list of what to put on that exactly mirrors that list is the Beatitudes in Matthew 5. Do you know this? Let's line these up today, because it's quite a fascinating look if you look at this. So first, Matthew 23, verse 13. There's eight times he says, woe. Woe is, you know, these, I'm calling you out on these things. I'm calling you out on these things. The first one is in verse 13. It says, but woe to you, scribes and Pharisees and hypocrites, for you shut up the kingdom of heaven against men, for you neither go in yourselves, nor do you allow those who are entering to go in. And one of the first things that we find out about these hypocrites is that no matter how religious they looked, they were shutting up or blocking people by their behavior from getting into the kingdom. They didn't go in themselves. And you're not allowing those that you're teaching or who are mimicking you in your ways to actually go to the kingdom. He says, whoa, this is a serious issue. This is an eternal life issue. For us, as we go through the days of unleavened bread, to become more sincere and to put away these things and to put on the other things is a life or death issue for us to do. So the first woe is you shut up the kingdom. Now, the first beatitude is what? Now, what we'll notice here, and I've got the same pattern on the slides, is, as I was saying before, is it just put out leaven? No. It's put out, but it's also to eat the unleavened bread. So on the left-hand side, I'll list the thing in Matthew 23 to put out. And on the right-hand side, I'll list the thing to eat, or the unleavened bread. This is a way to think about these days. Like I said in the past, I remember sitting in the audience and only hearing sermons about finding loaves of bread. Now I think, wow, that kind of misses the point. We need to put out sin, and we need to put on Christ. We heard the same thing in the sermonette. So the first thing is, the first one, you shut up the kingdom of heaven. Matthew 5, verse 3. Matthew 5, verse 3 is the companion scripture to that, the first beatitude. It says, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. The hypocrites on the left-hand side were blocking people from going into the kingdom of heaven. God says, the poor in spirit. Poor in spirit, theirs is the kingdom of heaven. You see the match there. One's not going to the kingdom, and here is the spirit for those who are going to be in the kingdom. What does blessed mean, first of all? Does it mean rich? Does it mean happy or anything like that? No, it means that God blesses a man if you are like this. God approves, gives him grace, he gives him favor. And poor in spirit, it's kind of hard to understand a little bit, poor in spirit, but it means to acknowledge, like you yourself are spiritually bankrupt. You yourself are unworthy before God. And you have an utter dependence on him. You're poor in the spirit. Says, you know, I'm not like the scribes and Pharisees who were like, guess what they said? I am pretty good at this. I, look at me. And and Christ is saying to him, you, your hypocrisy of this is not going to be in the kingdom. The people that follow that are not going to be in the kingdom. Yet those who are poor in the spirit are the ones who will be in the kingdom. So the thing to look out for, so let's think about these days of unleavened bread a little bit different. Let's take these 8 steps during these 7 days. You'll have to double one up. And we'll see, there's actually one doubled up in here. But take these things, one each day, and think about it. It's a way to think about these 7 days. So let's start on this one today. Would be the poor in the spirit. Am I? The opposite of poor would be haughty or vain. Right? Or pride. How can you be vain in the spirit? Well, comes in the form of like you are the best at it. You know, people can be vain about keeping God's laws and his ways. I'm the best law keeper. I keep the law so much better than the person next to me. You can actually be vain about keeping God's law. Or I'm the most zealous. I will go further than everybody else around me, and I am very proud of that. I won't say it out loud, but I just am proud of that type of a thing. You know what? God says that is not the attitude that will be in the kingdom. Those who say, I am poor, I am, you know, if the two people praying, one said, you know what, I do all of these great things, and I tithe, and I fast, and he said, nope, you're not justified. And the other one said, you know what, I'm a sinner. I need your help. That is poor in the spirit. There's so many examples of what poor in the spirit means in the Bible. Walk humbly before God. We don't walk haughtily. It's not about how we're the best at keeping something. We don't hang our hats on having the law. Oh, I'm so much better. I've got the Sabbath and the holy days, and I am so much better. We come before God and we say, I am a sinner. I need your help. I am spiritually bankrupt, and I have to rely on you. Those are the ones, poor in the spirit, who will be given an entrance. Those who are haughty, self-righteous, the best law keepers, the Pharisees, the best at it, the best who could show everybody else how great they were, are not even entering in. So, very interesting. And if we read about the Laodiceans, what did the Laodiceans say? Right? They said they were haughty in spirit. They said, I am rich. I am wealthy. I don't need anything. They didn't know that they're wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. Poor in the spirit. They thought they were rich in the spirit. That Laodicean Revelation 3:17 scripture should give us pause. Because if we think that we have it all, then it's more like the Laodiceans. I'm rich. I've got it. I don't need this. Poor in the spirit would say, I'm wretched, miserable, poor, I'm blind, naked, I need help, I need forgiveness, I need, God, what you give, what you're giving me. So we see the first one. You can see the contrast between the two of these things. Christ tells them, this is hypocrisy, this is a covering, this is something you're doing. Let's go on to the next one. Next one is in Matthew 23, verse 14. In fact, if you want to write next to Matthew 23, verse 14, write Matthew 5, 4. Or if you want to write next to Matthew 5, 4, write Matthew 23, 14 next to it. When we go down this list of 8 things, 2 different occasions, you'll find that they're mirrors of each other. So, days of unleavened bread putting off, let's put off the left and put on the right. What would we put off? The second thing, it says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees and hypocrites, for you devour widows' houses and for pretense make long prayers. Therefore, you will receive greater condemnation. And what were they doing? To them, the appearance was the most important thing. They gave long prayers so they could be seen as zealous, as righteous. This was the most important thing, that they would sit there in public and, oh, they would be so humble when they do it and give this long prayer. People walking by would go like, man, that person is so
dedicated. That's amazing. How good they are. Look how long. I can never pray that long. Boy, I can only pray for 5 minutes, and look at them. They're praying forever. And then they would get up from praying, and they would go destroy a widow. They would go destroy a widow. Their prayers were a pretense. That was something that was fake. That was something that wasn't true. That was for show. Because they could pray forever, and they could destroy a widow. And pure and undefiled religion before God is to, you know, the fatherless and the widows in their affliction. And what we find is they would go do the opposite of that. Now, match that up with Matthew 5, verse 4. Blessed are they who mourn, for they shall be comforted. What does mourn mean? Mourn means to truly humble yourself. You know, like if you're mourning in sackcloth and ashes or fasting, like you are truly humbling yourself on the inside. You are truly taking your heart and you are bringing it humble and down. So when you're praying and you're praying out of humility and mourning, then that's the one that's going to be comforted. And you can see here, the Pharisees were out of pretense. It was not done out of a humbleness. It was done out of a show. Now, do you see a pattern that's happening here? There's a pattern that's happening here. One is acting a certain way with a mask. The other one is being completely unmasked and straight to the heart of the matter. The one on the right is about the heart. The one on the left is covering up the heart. So what do you think would happen over time if you start to peel off the thing on the left and put on the thing on the right? Well, what happens is this comes off. This mask comes off. And you are a wide open. God can see the heart. He can see you. He says in different places, you know, when he says the phrase at the end, I never knew you, it's a very scary phrase. But if you think about that, it's not just a one, like, hey, this person was all of a sudden surprised. God has to know what your heart is. What is he doing with us? He's working with our hearts. So during these days of unleavened bread, think about this. Put off the thing on the left. True humility. Make your prayers. Humble yourself. Not for show. When you fast, you're not doing it to show other people. When you pray, you're not doing it to show other people. Mourn. Humble yourself. Do it for the right reasons is the opposite of doing it for show. So right next to those, Matthew 5:14, put Matthew 23:14, and besides Matthew 23:14, put Matthew 5:14. Let's go on to the next one where he says, woe. Matthew 23, verse 15. It says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees and hypocrites, for you travel land and sea to win one proselyte, and when he is won, you make him twice as much a son of hell as yourselves. You know a characteristic of hypocrites and Pharisees? Is to try to get followers, to try to get people to join them, to team up with you, to be in your little group, to be in your little thing, to follow you. And then what it says is not only do you get one of those people that are a follower of you, but man, he becomes twice as worse in his behavior than you were. Twice the son of hell as yourself. You know, when you think about it, twice the son of hell as yourself, this is a system based on politics. If you want the ultimate politicians and the ultimate groups of people, politics, it were these guys back then in those days. They would get them, they would go seeking out people to follow them. Whenever you see somebody trying to get people to follow them in any way, shape, or form, I don't necessarily mean, oh, just worship me. It's just, you know what? I'm going to get you in the in crowd, and I'm going to do special things for you because then you will show me favors back and forth. That's what they did. And then the people who get into this become a destructive force on everybody else. That's what this is saying. You feed off each other. You come twice somehow. You even go worse, more politicking. And then all pretty soon they think, you know, I should be, why is this person above me, and I should be there too. And I feel like, you know, when you start to think on this level, this is what they were doing. They got people to follow them. They built groupies. When you see that type of stuff, when you got in crowds and out crowds, that's not of God. That's not how he works. That's not how he works. Matthew 5 verse 5 is a companion scripture here. Blessed are the meek. The meek. For they shall inherit the earth. the meek. You humble yourselves. You are meek with other people. It doesn't matter what status and stature they are. It doesn't matter. You don't care about that. You actually genuinely from your heart are meek. I don't care if they're in power. I don't care if they're the lowliest person. I myself am meek. I talk to everybody. I extend a hand to everybody. I reach out to everybody. I'm not going to play the game of politics and building empires and getting people in the in crowd and the out crowd. I'm going to humble myself, and I don't care who you are, how great you think you are, how bad you may look, I am going to reach out humbly to every single person. Can you see that those two things are exactly opposite of each other? That is something for when Christ said, beware of this in you. Watch out for the thing on the left. Now, we weren't necessarily, we aren't the same place as these guys were back in the day, but there are shades of these things to think about. There are intents of each one of these phrases we need to look at putting out. But then what we put on is being meek. Let's be meek. Let's let down our pretenses. Let's not build up our groups. Let's let our down our walls. Let's be humble to each other. It doesn't matter where somebody came from. Let's do that. Those are the ones that will inherit the earth. Blessed are the meek. So next to Matthew 5, verse 5, we write Matthew 23, verse 15. Let's go on to the next one. Matthew 23, verse 16. Matthew 23, verse 16. It says, woe to you, blind guides, who say, whoever swears by the temple, it is nothing. But whoever swears by the gold of the temple, he's obliged to perform it. Fools and blind, for which is greater? The gold or the temple that sanctifies the gold. And whoever swears by the altar is nothing, but whoever swears by the gift that is on it, he's obliged to perform it. Fools and blind, which is greater, the gift or the altar that sanctifies the gift? Therefore, he who swears by the altar swears by it and by all things on it. He who swears by the temple swears by it, swears by it and by him who dwells in it. He who swears by heaven swears by the throne of God and him who sits on it. That's a lot of sentences. Right? But it's very basic way to think about this is, you know, if they said he who swears by the temple, it's nothing but he who swears by the gold on the temple. That's like me saying, if I say I swear I won't do this and I swear on this lectern, that's like the temple. It's nothing. It doesn't mean anything. But if I swear by the flowers in front of me, well, then that is, I must do it. So what they would do is they would make this big show of swearing, like, oh, I will do it on my life. I swear by the temple. Knowing full well, if they said the temple or the lectern, they weren't going to do it. But if they said the flowers, oh, now they're going to do it. Christ is calling him out, and he's saying, what's greater? Wait. The temple, the gold? Guess what? You're swearing there's a God there. There's all these other things that are seeing what you're doing. There's all these other things, right? He swears by the temple, swears by it and by him who dwells in it. So don't try to split a hair and say, if I swear on this lectern, I don't do it. Or if I do the flowers, I will do it. Guess what? God is around and he sees this, what you're doing, is basically what he's saying. So they would split it down to that level to make it sound like they're so amazingly righteous and they're just going to help you out. And that was them defining it on their own terms, right? And so they would pick. They knew full well, if you were in front of a group like this, and they would say, you know, I will do this for you. I swear by the temple. They knew full well that they weren't going to do it. That is hypocrisy. They made a promise. They look good. Everybody's like, oh, this person is really good. They're going to help us. And then they wouldn't do it. They knew full well they weren't going to do it. Right? So that looked righteous. It sounded great to people. But they were weaseling their way out of it. Matthew 5 verse 6 is the companion to this. Matthew 5, verse 6 is the companion to this. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled. There's an actual desire and a thirst for truth, righteousness, real things. Not playing a hypocrite and not trying to weasel in and out. There's a thirst, a hunger for truth, for righteousness. Wanting that with all of your heart is the exact opposite of trying to show something and pick another thing. That's not truth. That's not righteousness in a person. But those who are the thing that we put on are is to hunger and to thirst for righteousness. So put off the thing on the left. giving our word, not following through with it, knowing full well, you know, playing like we're big helpers, but we're actually kind of cheating out. But hunger and thirst for the truth, want every last ounce of what's true, every last ounce of what's right, and to seek, to hunger, to thirst for that. You begin to see everything on the right is about the heart. Everything on the left is about covering. Can you start to see that after a while? It's about the heart on the right, and the left is about covering things up. Let's keep going. Matthew 23, verse 23 is the next one. It says, woe to you, Matthew 23:23. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees and hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin and have neglected the weightier matters of law, justice and mercy and faith. These ought you have done without leaving the others undone. Blind guides who strayed out a gnat and swallow a camel. They missed the big point of it all. They missed the big point. What are matters of justice, mercy? What type of matters are justice, mercy, and faith? What are those matters of? Where do you have to process those and deal with those? Justice, mercy, and faith. They're of your heart. Those are internal matters. What are paying tithes? What kind of an act is that? It can be just a physical thing you do. It can be just a physical thing. So tithing on mint, anise, and cumin is an external matter. You can do that. I can sit here and take my spices, put them on the table, and go, oh, here's a tenth to God. And be like, well, you know, I feel really righteous today. But what if my heart is going to go devour a widow's house again? That's nothing. But justice, mercy, and faith, weightier matters of the law, are the intent you have to deal with from the inside. You can't deal with that just by a show of doing that. And so what we found here is hypocrisy caused them to have a shift in focus over time. They stopped focusing on the inside themselves, and they substituted it with something on the outside. They began wearing a mask. They put on a mask. They covered up. You know, when you stop focusing on yourself internally in your heart, instead of you then go, hey, you know what? I don't like what's inside of me. It's all ugly. And I need a change, and I got a lot to do. And then you go, that's too hard. You know what? I'm going to just come to church. I'm going to write a check. I'm going to do this. And I'm going to pretend like I'm righteous. That's substituting outside for inside work. Do we come to church? Yes. Do we write a check? Yes. But when you stop the focus on dealing with the right-hand side, the inside work, and you substitute it with something on the outside, this is where hypocrisy starts. You're covering up something. You're covering up something. You know, this happens a lot of times with, it can happen, I'm not saying every time, but sometimes people get into rituals because it makes you feel good. I don't know about you, but I've visited, when I fly around the world, which I love to go to cathedrals in different countries, Barcelona and Rome and all the different places that have been, there's always some big cathedral that takes hundreds of years to build. And you go inside of these things, and I love the architecture. I love the grandness. I love the bigness. And, you know, they took 150 years to build. It's just fascinating. But you get pulled in on the inside, because when you go in, there's always some big show that's going on. That's very ritualistic. People dressed to the, you know, nines, walking in a row, making their chants. They put their thing up and do the, you know. And after a while, you sit there and go, like, oh, you kind of get pulled into this. Like, wow, this feels, you know, like something. Does that require you to actually, if you go through that process, do any changes? It doesn't. I'm not saying every single person is a bad person. I'm just saying that's an external ritual. And rituals can have a pull on us, make us feel like we're spiritual. But as soon as you substitute dealing with your inside and substitute it for an outside thing, then you're becoming a hypocrite with a mask. This is what Christ is saying. Beware of this in you. So we have to stop focusing just outwards. We can't just say, you know, if the church would only, the church is like this, and you know what, I just can't have anything to do with it, so I'm going over here. Oh, and this group of people, I hate that. Oh, this person did this to me. When you become a victim like that and everything is external to you, you have stopped focusing on the inside. You have to ask you where your heart is. Am I bitter because of all this? Well, I need to deal with my bitterness. I need to deal with me. So don't substitute coming to church, keeping the Sabbath, paying your tithes, things like that as a ritual you go through. God's asking you, are you genuine in this? Are you doing this for real? So what's the attitude? Beatitude is in Matthew 5:7. What it say up above was, weightier matters of the law are justice, mercy, and faith. The Beatitude, Matthew 5:7, says, blessed are the merciful. That's one of the weightier matters of the law, for they shall obtain mercy. He's giving the principle that, hey, blessed are those who are truly merciful, one of the weightier matters of the law, you will obtain mercy. Can you see how that's a companion scripture there? Those who actually practice the weightier matters of the law, not just a show of keeping the law, but practice that. What does it take to be merciful is your heart. You can't fake that. You have to be genuine about that. It requires you to be that way from the heart. When you come to Passover and go, I'm holding a grudge against somebody, and God says, you know, you have to forgive others from your heart for you to be forgiven. And you're faced with this and go like, okay, I need to let that go. And that's a matter of the heart. Being truly merciful is that. And so what we find is the thing on the left is they substituted all of these weightier things of the heart, and they put on an external show of keeping the law and substituted those things. And God says, no. Blessed are the merciful, because you will get mercy. Right? Blessed are those who are, you know, faithful. They will have, you know, etc. So these are talking about the weightier matters of law, Matthew 5:7. All right, let's keep going. So we can finish up here by top of the hour. Matthew 23, verse 25 is the next one. Matthew 23, verse 25 says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you clean the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside are full of extortion and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, clean the inside of the cup and the dish, then the outside of them may be cleaned also. Right? It's, they were cleaning the outside. So on the outside, they were trying to look good themselves. But on the inside, what were the heart? They were extorting people. You know, it's about money. And then it was about justifying the rich and then those who were poor and getting more for themselves and self-indulgent to, you know, use it on their own lusts. And what they would do is they would clean the outside of it. They would wash up on the outside. They wouldn't deal with what was on the inside. And he says to them, first clean the inside, the cup and the dish. And the companion to that is Matthew 5:8. So, which is, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. The pure in heart is, you are pure. What they were showing is that they looked pure, but inside were extortion and self-indulgence. Pure in heart means that you have let all of that go, and you have examined your heart from the inside, and you have taken out all of the stuff. Anything that's an impurity, you have let it go. You've gotten rid of extortion and self-indulgence. And you're asking yourself, is my heart, am I doing this from a pure motive? You know, and this is an important one to ask if you tend to be passive-aggressive. Hey, you know, I'm doing this for you, but, you know, could you just change your attitude? And, you know, maybe you might mean well, but it's not really for the other person. It's for you. You just kind of say it in a nice way. It's saying, you know what? Test you. Is your heart pure? Are you doing this in a pure way? Do I really think this? And constantly ask yourself that. Not pure, not showing yourself to be pure, not saying in a pure way, but actually pure through and through, because they showed themselves outside to be pure, but inside they weren't at all. So a pure heart wouldn't be into extortion, bribes, power, holding people hostage, passive-aggressive, control, any of that kind of stuff. A pure heart would be very pure to themselves and to other people. It wouldn't be about the self. And so God says, clean from the inside out. They cleaned from the outside and didn't go in at all. So that's Matthew 23, 25, and Matthew 5, verse 8. Let's go to the next one, Matthew 23, 27. Matthew 23, 27 is the next one that says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees and hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside are full of dead man's bones and all uncleanness. Even so, you also outwardly appear righteous to men, but inside you're full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. And I think that's an interesting one. We look at what they did and we think, were they keeping the law? Actually, they were not keeping the law. They may have done it to the nth degree, but they weren't missing what the law was all about. But what they did here is at the time of the year that came around here, what they would do is they would go to tombs, so in a graveyard, and what they would do is to make it clean up the graveyard, is they would whitewash the outside of the tombs, right? And all of a sudden you're walking by, so you could see them and you wouldn't mistakenly walk near them, and all of a sudden you're defiled and not eligible to keep the Passover. So they make sure they're very clear, very like I can see them, they're there. And what Christ is saying is you're just like that tomb. You whitewash the outside, but inside is a dead person. You whitewash the tomb, but you're a dead man walking, is what he was saying to them. Spiritually dead people walking, but they appeared like a tomb. So the appearance, the outside, the mask they wore was the most important thing to them. Were they keeping the law? No. They were full of lawlessness. But again, the outside they covered up versus dealing with the inside. So what do we find? What's the companion one to that? Matthew 5 verse 9, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. How does that match? You know, what's interesting is when you appear to be righteous and focus on your righteousness and just the outside, you won't have peace. You won't have peace in your life. You will not have peace with other people. Why? Because when you're self-righteous and just about your appearance, it's about your effort, how much you're doing, how great you look, how much more righteous you are compared to other people, and how much others aren't as good as you. And you're putting them down either passively, subtly, or directly, because they're not living up to your amazingly righteous standard. Do you know, if you think about this cycle, you are not making peace. You are dividing. You are about yourself. And it says, blessed are the peacemakers. Peacemakers is a matter of the heart. Right? To make peace, you actually have to humble yourself and not be more righteous and think you're better than the next person. How much does pride get in the way? This is talking about pride. Man, I'm just going to paint the outside. I'm going to look so good. I'm going to drive the best car, wear the best suits. I'm going to be perfectly manicured. Everything's all put in place, but the inside is a mess. You will not have peace or be making peace. That is about you. But a peacemaker has to humble and say, I will give up something to make peace here. I may take a chunk out of me. It may hurt. But I'm going to not have my pride in everything of how great I am. I'm going to actually go try to make peace here. It's the opposite of trying to inflate the self, is to, you have to deflate yourself to make peace. Don't you? You have to humble yourself. It's a hard process. Anything else breeds factions, and better and worse, and doing it better and looking better and looking worse. Making peace requires you to humble and not look better. You may have to look worse. You may have to give up a chunk of your hide to make peace with somebody. Okay? I agree. I am sorry I did all this, and make peace with somebody. That is the opposite of inflating yourself. I'm not saying compromise the law here, but appearing righteous on the outside only produces division, angst, strife, produces feelings of inadequacy in other people. Mr. Armstrong used to always say, if you ever around somebody who makes you feel inadequate spiritually because how great they are doing it, he says, they're not right. And I found that quite insightful, because it's very true. If they're making you feel like you're just down here and they're doing it so much better than you, they're not right. Because we have to make peace. We have to humble ourselves. That's a hard thing to do. We have to give all that up. We may even have to look bad to make peace with somebody. Right? Blessed are those who don't cause strife, but they make peace. Not puff yourself up, but make peace. You have to give something up to do that. If you're willing to do that and pursue that from the heart, you have to do it from the heart. Okay, so last one, Matthew 23:29. It's very interesting because it says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you build the tombs of the prophets and adorn the monuments of the righteous. And say, if we lived in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets. They would. Here is the grave of a prophet. Let's build it. You know, let's honor that person. And then let's adorn it. Monuments. So it's a testament to all of those, our forefathers who went before. And you know what? If we were back there, we would never have killed the prophets, would we have? And Christ is sitting there saying, okay, so I am the very Son of God. I am the prophet of all prophets. I am the king. I'm in front of you. And guess what you're going to do? You're going to kill me. And they're making a show of how righteous they were. The very prophet of all prophets was there and they killed him. Again, it was for show. It was not for real from the heart. Not for real from the heart. And let's see the Beatitudes that match this. There's actually two, if you combine it together. Matthew 5, verse 10 to 12. There's two blesseds. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. You see how they're saying, hey, we wouldn't have killed people. And they say, hey, you're blessed if you actually are persecuted for righteousness, like the prophets. For theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And also, blessed are you when reviled and persecuted, you and they say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Can you see that? There's actually two here about the blessing, right? And it talks about being persecuted for righteousness' sake like the prophets. So you can see that one too very clearly on the left-hand side. This is what they said. They claimed the prophets, but yet if they were back in that day, they would have been the ones to kill them because they actually killed the prophets standing in front of them, who was greater than all of them. And then Christ says the Beatitude, don't just hang your hat on your forefathers. I'm of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I'm of the church. I'm of the truth. I'm of these people. And you don't hang your hat on those things. You don't just pump those up. It says, you know what? If you are doing the right thing, you will be persecuted for righteousness' sake. Blessed when they persecute you, when they revile you, because they did this to the prophets, they will do it to you. But rejoice in that. I find this one interesting is because there's two of them that cover this topic. Maybe there's a double blessing there, because this is a hard one to deal with. Being persecuted for righteousness' sake in the wrong way, there's double blessing there. There's God, you know, Christ says too, blessed are those and blessed are those when this happens to you. So there is really a double blessing that happens for that. But what we have to do is not hang our hat just on who we think we are. But we will, when persecuted, not revile in return. So, summarize all this. You can kind of see now, if you put the list, I've only pulled out a word here and there, so they don't exactly the word-for-word line up, but you can see that on the left-hand side, you look at the list of eight things that Christ said, watch out for this leaven during the days of unleavened bread. Think about putting off the thing on the left or any nuance of the thing on the left and then put on the thing on the right, the matter of the heart, being poor in spirit, mourn, meek, hunger and thirst for righteousness, merciful, pure in heart, peacemakers, persecuted for righteousness' sake. Every single one of the things on the right requires your heart to be open, involved, vulnerable, authentic. It requires you to be out there. It requires you to be not holed up with a mask. It requires, think about this on the part on the right, all the meekness and the mourning and merciful and pureness, all of those things require you to be fully opened, not covered, not with a mask, you know, 100% authentic. These are matters of the heart. So to remove the mask, this is the process God takes us through. To remove the mask is to pull off the things that are on the left and to put on the things that are on the right. And when you get to this place, God says, I can see you now. I know you. I can see your heart. I can see those things in you. And now you can see me. When we let the things on the left in, we start to put on and have a mask. Substitutes anything from the heart with something on the outside and something external is us putting on the mask. So let's think about this during the days of unleavened bread. And let's read one last scripture in Deuteronomy 8, verse 2. Deuteronomy 8, verse 2. We read the scripture, and this is the process that he took ancient Israel through to take the mask off. He says, Deuteronomy 8, verse 2 says, you shall remember that the Lord your God, this is talking about these days, led you all the way these 40 years in the wilderness to humble you and to test you, to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not, to know what was in your heart, to unmask you and to see what was in your heart, the things on the right. So God is asking this of us during these days of unleavened bread. He's always testing this. He's always probing. He wants to know if you are authentic. Are you genuine? He wants to know what's in your heart. And he'll take us through the process, no matter how it happened to us, no matter how we built it, but to remove that mask so that we can see clearly.